Welcome to the Lavo Show podcast. Conversations with outstanding human beings whose love has been inspired and transformed by Osho. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Hello and thanks for tuning in. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Chetan Parkin. Chetan is a mechanical engineer by training and took sannyas in 1979. Chetan has spent 25 years mastering human design and he's on a mission to bring human design to the larger world. I'm so happy to have Chetan on the show and I hope you enjoyed. Chetan, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm in great shape. Thank you, Swaram.
Excellent. So to start, tell us a little bit about how you came across Osho.
It was a period of time in my life. I was in my late 20s and my father died. And he was my great ally in life. And I was really miserable, upset, you know, didn't know what to do when he died. And I scattered his ashes. I went to his cremation, scattered his ashes in a place that he loved in Scotland. And then I was just sitting on my own one night, just kind of mulling over, what's the point? And it was just one of those extraordinary things. I felt his spirit come into the room, ecstatic. And I felt him go twice around the room, above my head. And as he went out, I heard him say to me, "It's all right. You can go now." And this completely shook me out of my stupor. And within a matter of weeks, goodness knows how it all happened, but I found myself driving a thing called the Magic Bus, which was a bus journey from London to New Delhi in India. And I found myself behind the wheel of it, driving this bus. There were 43 seats on the bus. 42 people knew exactly where we were going. 26 of them were already sannyasins. I had no idea what sannyas was or who Osho was or anything. But it started a great adventure for me. And these people, these sannyasins, had such a strong effect on me that inevitably when I ran into them again in India and they'd been in the ashram and they'd been around Osho, it was quite clear I had to make my journey there as well.
That was, I guess, 1979. So it was a time where the commune was still expanding and building up. And I believe there was a time where you could have intimate moments with Osho. Would you like to share with us some time that you, perhaps when you met Osho for the first time or if you had any personal contact with Osho?
Absolutely. At the time, I was extraordinarily shy. And just it took me a while to get acclimatized in the ashram to see what was going on. I think I'd probably been there a week at the time and, you know, going to discourse every day and sitting at the back of the hall because people that weren't sannyasins had not been initiated had to sit right at the back. And I remember at the end of one discourse just coming to, as it were, and realizing my lap was just soaked. I'd been crying throughout the whole discourse. And I knew in that moment, this was time for me to take sannyas. So I did take sannyas. It was almost this time of the year in 1979. And I remember sitting on a bench outside Changsu Auditorium before going in to receive the sannyas and being told quite clearly, you know, don't ask. If Osho asks, "Have you got anything to say after he's given you sannyas?" just say no. And it amazed me at the time, you know, because apparently Osho would go on talking, you know, somebody asked him a question or something, he'd just talk and talk and, you know, it would go on into the night. So there was a real discouragement to extend the evening darshan more than everyone there that lived there felt was okay. Anyway, you know, I go in and receive sannyas from Osho. It was a most extraordinary experience. And kneeling in front of him and it really kneeling in an extraordinary environment. And, you know, knowing that he had this capacity to see all about me. And I remember him writing down my name on a piece of paper, telling me to close my eyes. And then when he'd written down the name, he said, "Come closer." And I go right up to him. And he slips a mala over my head and holds on to the locket. And he says, "Look at me." And then he puts his hand on my head, thumb on my third eye. And my memory of that moment is I shut my eyes completely, you know, which is not the thing you need to do when somebody says, "Look at me," especially in a situation like that. But I remember when he's kind of sat back in his chair and he said, "Good." And when I saw the photograph afterwards, my eyes were wide open. And what was being shown to me, perhaps, was something that my mind or my brain just could not comprehend. he talked to me about giving me some groups, which was customary in those days. He would strategize, certain therapy groups that were available. And we had a little bit of a discussion around that because I was already doing one of the groups. And in the end, you know, it was just, I was so shy and so abashed and so amazed at being in that presence, in being in that place, like really feeling that energy. And having told me all about my name and what my whole path in life was to be, you know, how to associate with my name. And it was just when I got to right the end of it and he asked me, have you got anything to say to me? From deep inside me came just two words, or actually three. Thank you, Bhagwan, as it was in those days. And he just, you know, he realized the connection that I'd come from within me to say those words. So simple words, but it really came from the core of my being. And he just rocked back in his chair and he was laughing. And he said, good, good. And that was it. That was the only time I ever had verbal contact with Osho. But it was an extraordinary experience, is all I can say.
Well, thank you so much for sharing. I really felt immersed in that vibes and energy, and I could picture you in front of Osho, and it's very vivid, and the way you recount it, it's alive. So I love it.
Today, you know, just it's so clear.
Wonderful. So before we jump into the main part of today's episode, which is about, of course, human design, which is your speciality and your life passion. Just for me to understand, after you took sannyas and you were there in Pune, did you stay? Because some people used to just leave there, everything behind, and just live in the commune full time, and others were going up and down to work. So what's your story? Did you stay in the commune many years, or you were going up and down and keep your profession?
No, my profession was long gone. I stayed in Pune One for a year and a half, and then went back to England for a little while, and then found myself at the ranch almost. I arrived the day after he did on the ranch and stayed there until that ended. And then when he came back from the world tour, I went back to Bombay when he was there, and then up to Pune. So yeah, I would say I was very intent on being in his company. Being in Pune One was a pretty amazing experience. I mean, it was very, very hippie-ish. Everybody had long hair and long beards, and the Mars were just, you know, gorgeous, and everyone was wearing robes and just flowing around the place. It was a really amazing experience. So, honestly speaking, whatever profession I'd had before, yes, I guess it came into play a little bit at the ranch. I did get involved in the pipe crew and the pumps and things like that. It had a bit of an engineering background to it. But what really changed my whole experience was I was very shy, as I said. I had no intention of asking a question in discourse and having Osho discuss the question in front of everybody. But I heard him say, if you really had questions about yourself, that there was a man that was living in Bombay, Mumbai, and you could go and visit with him, and he'd tell you everything about your life, and you'd never need to ask another question ever again. So I went to visit this man. He's a man called a shadow reader, Chaya Shastri. And this man did read me. He was working from a system from things that were written down 2,500 years ago. And he described me to a T, not just this lifetime, but all other lifetimes as well. And at the end of the reading, he closed up what he was reading from. And he turned to me and said, I want you to come and work with me because you know how to do this work. And I was so shocked by the reading in the first place, and then having him say this to me, and I really couldn't equate. I just could not see myself leaving the ashram, living in Bombay, you know, learning this system. And, it's kind of father to son system. So it was too much of a shock for me, and I turned him down. I said, no, I can't do that. And then when he'd finished laughing, because he knew exactly where my life was going and I didn't, you know, when he finished laughing, he said, well, it doesn't matter. You're going to do this work anyhow. And my suggestion is you find some kind of system to start with, start reading for people, start telling people about themselves because you have this gift. You've had it for a long time because there's a system that's going to come into your life. It's a new system. You're going to write books about it. You're going to introduce it all over the world. You're going to teach people. You're going to give readings from it. And it's going to change people's lives forever. And this was in December of 1979. And, you know, it was an extraordinary thing to have told to me. So I went back up to the ashram thinking that was a really interesting experience. And then about a week later, at the time I was working in the boutique in the Pune One ashram, And there was this psychic palm reader who was there in the store for one reason or another. And he insisted on reading my hands and told me a lot of the same things that the shadow reader in Bombay had told me about. And then insisted on showing me how to read hands. And I went back to, it was all of a 10 or 15 minute lesson, how to read hands. He showed me all the lines and the whirls and said, now practice. So I go back to where I'm staying that night, a little funky hotel on the other side of the river in Pune. And I'm sitting outside with my friends having dinner. And I said, the weirdest thing happened to me today. This guy showed me how to read hands. And within a matter of 10 seconds, the table was covered with hands. Everybody in the restaurant got up and put their hands on the table, including the waiter. And that was where it all started. In the years following, I learned all kinds of different esoteric systems. I read all kinds of astrologers and I Chings and Kabbalahs and all kinds of different things. And sure enough, in 1993, human design showed up in my life. And I knew immediately this is what the shadow reader had told me about. So that was where it all started.
Wow, that's quite extraordinary. And there are so many charlatans in this kind of area of palm readings. But in your case, it sounds like the guy was real and he actually, saw it in you. And that's exactly what happened in your life. And it's amazing. And so the system that the palm reader in Bombay was talking about is clearly the human design. And
He was talking about a new system that hadn't come in yet.
So, and I've heard a lot about that, but I don't know the details. So if you could give us a little overview, just to explain the basics on how it works and what it is for people who are really beginners and don't know anything about it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So human design, it actually was downloaded in 1987. So I'd heard about it in 1979, and it was like, yes, that's very interesting. But 1987, it was downloaded by this individual, a man called Robert Allen Krakauer, who took on the name Ra, and he was living in the island of Ibiza at the time, off Spain. And he was given the system without an instruction book. And it was such a powerful download, it really shook his nervous system. And I don't think he ever really completely recovered from it. However, we are all very grateful for the fact that he survived the experience and was able to introduce it to the world. And it's a system, basically, that we could describe it as a synthesis, a little bit like a cake mix. There are different ingredients that go into it, none of which are the end product. So with a cake, you put in flour and sugar and eggs and these different things, and you bake it and you have a cake. With human design, it takes in these four wisdom traditions, astrology, the I Ching, the Kabbalah, and the chakra system. And it mixes them up and it comes out with this thing called human design. And human design has a basis in all of these four disciplines, but it is not any of these four disciplines. It's something unique to itself. I see it as an awareness tool. I really see it as an awareness tool that it gives you certain clues about yourself. That if you follow these clues and you live out these clues, because they relate directly to you as an individual, then your whole life accelerates. So that is the way I've approached it, just to introduce it as far and wide as possible as an awareness tool. Now, there's a great deal of knowledge that goes with it. There are people that study it. It's like several rabbit holes you can go down in all kinds of different directions, studying human design. But my whole work has been steering around something that's really practical, easy to work with. The system is unique. It's the first of the Aquarian system in the development for these times. And why I say that is because we're coming out of the Piscean Age, which is an age of faith-based religions and trusting in everything except oneself. And the Aquarian Age is all about trusting in oneself and being responsible for oneself. And human design, really, it's like a user's manual for one's life journey. And it gives so many great clues of how to align and be accepting of that, what the design that we've given ourselves for this lifetime. And just to see, this is how it works for us as an individual. So it's truly an amazing system. It can be seen as very complex. My whole work has been to make it as simple as possible, so pretty much anybody can understand how to work with it.
Okay, I get it. So, apologies for the oversimplification, but, basically it's a combination of different ancient traditions like astrology, Kabbalah, yet it's something different and unique. So my question is, is it something given to us at birth, or, you know, something that we are born with, which is static and non-modifiable, like genetics, for example, or it's something that, you know, you can manipulate?
Well, in very simple terms, when we look at a human design chart, we're looking at somebody's genetic makeup. In very, very simple terms, we're looking at a description of the vehicle that their consciousness took on for this lifetime. So, you know, we're not the body, we're not the mind, we're not the emotions, we're the witnessing consciousness. And the beautiful thing about the human design is it gives you the place of the witness to be able to watch how one goes through life, who one is attracted to, what one is attracted to, what is one's involvement. And probably the most important thing that I found in human design is how to make clear decisions, how to make decisions that absolutely resonate with one's individual nature. So, yes, it is a new system. It is given for us for this time. To draw up the human design chart, we're very interested in somebody's birth date, time, and place, as with astrology. And it's not the same as astrology in that we make a calculation for the moment of birth. But instead of looking at signs of the zodiac, we're looking at hexagrams in the I Ching instead. So it gives us a very, very refined point of view. And the other aspect of it as well that is quite unique to human design is we do a second calculation. And the second calculation is for a moment about 3 months before the birth. And this second calculation outlines exactly the genetic inheritance that we received from our ancestry. And we've traced this genetic influence back to at least 4 generations of input. So it's fascinating to watch, you know, where do we land? What family did we drop into? What are the influences around us just in our unconscious nature? You know, what is it that's motivating us? And then being able to also see, well, what is our conscious purpose here as well? So it's a unique system in that regard. I always say to people when I look at the unconscious side of their makeup, you know, this second calculation, that there's at least 10 years worth of talking to a psychoanalyst to get all this stuff out of you. And with human design, all we've done is click the mouse and there it is in the calculation. So it truly is a 21st century self-remembering device. That's how I see human design.
Okay, so it sounds like it's very sophisticated and accurate, yet very simple and practical to use, essentially. And I'm curious to know if you have spoken to Osho about it, or if you got any guidance from Osho, or if Osho ever commented, or it was human design, it was part of the sannyas community already at the time where Osho was still in the body.
You know, I understand that the person who was given human design tried to get in touch with Osho because he was living in a community where there were quite a lot of sannyasins around him. And he really needed some guidance with it. But the unfortunate thing was, Osho was going more and more and more into silence at the time he started writing. And so there was never a discourse between the two of them about human design. From my own perspective, though, I have felt nothing but support from Osho in working with this system. and I feel him all the time. So it's an incredible thing having that possibility of not just giving somebody a reading with human design, but actually experiencing a transmission of consciousness. And there have been some extraordinary experiences in my life working with human design, working with people. And inevitably, the question comes up, you know, how do I calm my mind? Well, you know, meditation. Osho's got all these meditations. Why don't you check them out? So in any of the work I do with human design, Osho is always very, very close by. And it's so easy to just say, look, you want to find out more about yourself. You know, there's somebody that can give you a massive amount of assistance there.
If you were to condense in a couple of sentences, what have you learned from Osho that helps you in the work you do today? What would that be?
When I first arrived in Pune, I was one of the most serious people I ever met, Swaram. And I have to say, Osho cured me of that, you know, sense of humor, essential. And to see getting over any kind of sense of worry of what life is supposed to deliver. Life is a mystery. And I don't care. People will say, oh, human design, you know, it's all cast in stone, you know, exactly what's coming. And even the shadow reader that I met in Bombay, he said, oh, you know, here it's all written, you know, this is what's going to be a life conclusion. And being around Osho, just seeing, you know, life is a mystery and celebration has to be the keynote. It has to be the keynote for this life.
You mentioned before that you were very shy and serious, but, you know, I just speaking with you just a few minutes, I can feel that you're transformed in that, from that point of view. You clearly don't come across as shy and serious, and then that you worry about life. So definitely the work you have done in the commune has produced results. So in 2000, you felt the call to reach out to a wider audience and make the system available to as many people as possible. So what happened then and that triggered this urge to spread the human design system?
Yeah. Well, at the time, Swaram, I'd been living on Maui in Hawaii, and I was working, I would have to say, half a day a week reading people's hands. And I was, you know, I was supporting myself on that pretty much. It was possible in that time. And then when human design came into my life, I had to find out all about it. And this person who had been given the system, Ra, he was being hosted by friends of mine that lived in New Mexico, in Taos, New Mexico. So twice a year, I put every penny I had into flying there and taking his classes. And this went on for about 7 years. And I learned everything I could about human design as he was still very much in tune with the message that he'd got originally. And then around 2000, I realized, from my way of seeing things, he was going off track. And you know, after you've listened to Osho for years, like I did, you know, one of the greatest speakers you're ever going to come across, who just is such a great storyteller and such a great describer of this life experience and the Aquarian age that's coming. And then to listen to somebody who was kind of very set in how he was going to teach and, you know, had this real kind of dogma around what he was describing. And it just occurred to me around 2000, you know, I've learned the system, I've mastered the system. He qualified me as a teacher in 1997. I don't need to go to these classes anymore. And so from that moment on, I started expanding my review of what it is I'd learned. You know, I started putting the human design into my own language and putting it into as simple a description of things as possible. So for those next years, you know, I kind of separated myself from what was then forming as a kind of human design community. Ra put together these two corporations, asked me if I'd join it, and I just said, not really, thanks, you know. And so I carried on, and I started introducing human design all over the world, teaching. And I always wondered, you know, the shadow reader had told me about books, and I was always wondering, you know, how are these books going to happen? And I kept writing, and I never kind of found a way to introduce them to the world until one day I gave a reading to somebody's boyfriend. She needed me to kind of help him clarify what was going on in his life. And at the end of the reading, he said, oh, there's a book in this. And I said, oh, really? And he said, yeah, in 2007. And I went to London with him. He walked me into the number one agent in London, who walked me into HarperCollins in London. And they agreed to publish my first human design book. And instead of just being somebody that gave readings and the odd teaching every now and again, all of a sudden we had a business. And, you know, the book is now in 14 languages all over the world, and it's a bestseller in one or two countries. And there's been two other books that followed it. So what that shadow reader told me in 1979 came to pass in 2009. I had to wait 30 years for the first book. But there is a kind of a global recognition now with these books and with our website and with the reports and the teachings and things that we do.
In addition to the three books, one of which, as you said, is translated in many languages, you also created, I think in 2009, an online human design report. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. Well, you know, when we suddenly found we had a business and we couldn't kind of answer everybody's questions, and we felt like we had to produce something where everybody could participate. And so we put ourselves in hiding for about 3 months, my wife Nishtha and I, and we wrote up these reports. We offer a free report on our website, so anyone can go there. It's about a 4-page report, and it's it tells you all about one aspect of your design. And it's very clear, gives you the chart and everything. And then we also put together what we call a comprehensive report, which is more like a 20-page report that is all about you and tells you all what we see as the essential aspects of your design, considering the fact that not everybody has a terribly accurate birth time. So when we do readings one-on-one, we absolutely tune into, you know, what is the right time for somebody's birth. But for the reports, we kept it within the bounds of what we thought was intelligent for people to receive. And we've had nothing but compliments from all over the planet, people getting these reports and just saying, finally, they understand something about themselves that they'd never received from another source. And it was a very simple thing. They just had to go on the website and get their report. And all of a sudden, they're getting a very clear reflection of who they are and what they're living out in this lifetime.
That's one of the beauties of today's technological world, that you can reach out to so many people just sitting in your home. At the same time, of course, I believe that online can never substitute the one-to-one personal contact, but at the same time, it's a wonderful introduction and a way for you to reach out to many more people. So that's great. So what are the latest projects and what are you working on at the moment?
Well, in the last couple of years, we've put together an app, and it's an app that works both on iPhones and on Android systems. And that, again, is going all over the world as well. It's a beautiful little app, and we've put a lot of love into it. And that's been a really fun project. We've launched what we call our business success program as well. We find a lot of people, entrepreneurs, solopreneurs, they're trying to get business together. And we found certain codes within the design chart of any individual that will point directly to how they can find that success. So we've been working on that quite a bit, getting that out into the world. We're doing an advanced course this year. This is the first time we're doing this. It's like a 16-part course for advanced human design readers. I don't use the word analyst. I use practitioners or readers for people that work with human design. We're encouraging people to join in with that, because we're basically, with Carola Nishta and myself, I've been working since 1993 with human design. She's been working since 1997 with human design. We have many years of experience working with human design, and we've learned an awful lot in this time of doing thousands of readings and a lot of trainings. And it's going to take everybody right the way through everything from a simple chart reading all the way to relationships, business success, and beyond. So we're very excited about that particular thing that we're putting together at the moment as well.
Yeah, it's really exciting indeed, and to see how your work is expanding. So we are heading towards the end, and I've got three final questions. But before that, just something popped up, and I'm wondering if you have noticed any differences between sannyasins, so people who are in the path with Osho, and others in terms of human design?
It's possible to see that. Honestly speaking, I've been giving so many readings over the years that a lot of times I don't actually see the person. I just have them on the end of the phone, or perhaps I see them on Skype. To me, it's quite clear when somebody is a sannyasin. I feel the energy. I feel the heart connection. It's just instantaneous. There's always that. There are certain features within a human design chart that would indicate somebody's very oriented towards being in a community, working in that realm. There are certain signs within a chart that indicates to me whether somebody's likely to be on a spiritual path or not. But I've done so many readings over the years now that pretty much I can pick up somebody's level of comprehension right away. It's one of those intuitive things. But yes, I have to say, you know, yes, there are people that are always on the path. And I had the opportunity recently, and I just want to say this, for I had the opportunity after 23 years to visit the community again in Pune. And I hadn't been there since 1995, and I went through the gates again in January of this year. And it was the most extraordinary experience, moving into that energy field again, moving into that instant comprehension of meditation. The master's energy is so clear there. So clear. And I walked through the gate and I had to sit down. I didn't start crying or anything like that, but I just had to sit down, because immediately I was dropped into that space of meditation, and it was incredible. So, it is still absolutely available. The energy is absolutely still there.
Indeed, I was there actually in February, so we missed each other for a few weeks. Just an idea based on what you just said, because you made me think that you have so many readings, so at some point you could even collect all the data and draw some conclusion and do some studies. If you have thousands and thousands of people readings, it'd be interesting to see that, you know, you could come up with some kind of further development of your work. Just an idea.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that, Suram. I'm not a statistician, but I do gather a lot of insight. The primary insight I've got from working with human design is there are no two people living anything like the same life. And every person has to be respected as an individual. And what I found also is that, as Osho always tried to indicate to us, transformation happens through sound and silence. And he always said, yes, you know, I've got to talk about something, but listen to the gap between the words, because that's when you get the insight. And so I love giving readings for people just to play with this, just to offer the insight and literally see the light bulb go on or hear the penny drop or whatever it is, like when somebody really gets it and they really drop into themselves, perhaps for the first time in, you know, decades. So it's a wonderful thing. As to whether I ever put together a whole mass of data and stuff, I don't know. But my books seem to be working in the world. People seem to enjoy reading them and getting that insight. And I know the people that I teach. I'm doing a lot of teaching around the world these days. And certainly things seem to be transferring there. It's a wonderful experience like that.
I love it. And so if someone wants to start knowing more about your work, what would be the first book that you would recommend? Like someone like me that doesn't know much, and now after this talk I got curious and I want to start on the path of human design.
Well, honestly speaking, I mean, there is my first book that was published by HarperCollins that's now in 14 languages. That one's called Human Design, Discover the Person You Were Born to Be. But honestly, I'd say the simpler path is go on our website, humandesignforusall.com. We included everybody, humandesignforusall.com, and get your free report. And, you know, just have a look at it, see what it says to you. And if you're really enthusiastic about it, get your comprehensive report. Also, get the app. There's a free app. If you go through your iPhone or your Android phone, thehumandesignapp.com, you'll be able to be directed to the right place to install the app and play with it, see what happens. There's a lot of information in the app as well, and that's free. So everything to play for.
And playfully, I will link your links to the show notes, so anyone can click there and connect with you and get access to this free material that you offer. Okay, so we've got three final questions for you. And the first one is, what's your morning routine? How does your morning look like in the first couple of hours of your day?
Well, what I like to do is get up at 3 a.m. and sit for an hour and just find that quiet, you know, in the middle of the night where it's quiet all around, and just sit for my hour, perhaps hour and a half, depends how deep the meditation goes, and then go back to bed again and wake up at a sensible time. So that's pretty much how it starts. I'm into drinking a lot of tea these days. I've been traveling a lot around China lately and come back with suitcases full of tea. So I drink a lot of tea and it's great. That's pretty much my morning routine. And then, you know, emails and answering people's questions and stuff and setting up readings for the day. And perhaps I've got a training every now and again online. So that's pretty much how my day looks.
Okay. So the second question is, what's your favorite meditation and why?
Honestly, my favorite meditation these days is just sitting quiet. I tried everything, all the meditations Osho did. They're all perfect in their own way. These days, I'm pretty quiet at 3 a.m. in the morning. So, yeah, that's my preferred meditation, is just sitting, watching, witnessing.
Okay, so the last question is, you lived the Osho experiment. You were one of the pioneers in this movement of creating a new man, Zorba the Buddha. What does it mean to you personally to be with Osho today in 2019?
I think it's quite clear to say that I miss his physical presence. I mean, it was such an extraordinary thing being around him when he was around. I mean, just amazing. But He's here still. So, I mean, I feel him right at this moment in time that we're talking. So it's like the miracle goes on is what I can say. So I have no idea what my life would have been like if he hadn't somehow found his way into it. So I just am so completely grateful.
Well, on these notes of gratefulness, we can finish this episode. And I'm grateful to you. I really enjoyed connecting with you and chatting with you and learning about human design. And so, yeah, I just want to thank you for being with us and for sharing your story.
Thank you, Swaram. Great pleasure. Lots of love.
Lots of love to you and a big hug. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Lavo Show podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, you can show your appreciation by leaving a review on iTunes. Visit lavoshow.com for new episodes, blogs,
and much more.